This is Up to Date on KCOR 89.3. Steve Kraske is off this week. I'm Danny Alexander sitting in the host chair today. Brian Ellison will be here Tuesday and Wednesday. So, Thanksgiving Day. It's one of the original four congressionally designated federal holidays in America. For generations, the origin story was the Pilgrims arriving in Plymouth Harbor and making it through that first winter with the help of the Indians. The native people also assisted the settlers with getting their first crops in the ground, and after that year's harvest, the first Thanksgiving feast took place. While historians have worked to present a more accurate account of the Pilgrims' early years, one thing that has come out of it is sitting down with others to share a meal and give thanks. You might even say that Thanksgiving feast in 1621 was a friendsgiving as well, as the native people who befriended the Pilgrims participated in the celebration. Today we want to look at friendsgiving, the extension of Thanksgiving, and get a better understanding of the original holiday and how it has evolved. To help with that is Amy Adamczyk, a professor of sociology at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at City University of New York. Professor, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you so much.
Professor, there are theories about why we commemorate past events. You've written about those as the role of the past for explaining the present, as well as the importance of the present for explaining the past. Now, I get the past explaining the present because that's kind of the way I've always looked at Thanksgiving. But would you explain the importance of the present for explaining the past?
Yeah, absolutely. So especially with holidays like Thanksgiving, what we see is that there might have been a little bit of a seed planted once upon a time about what this would be, but it's very much today about looking back at that past and looking at the context that we're now in to try to make sense of that past. And in that regard, holidays like Thanksgiving evolve quite a bit further from what they originally were. And so it's this idea that what is going on right now? And we see that with Thanksgiving, say, in the 1920s, when, you know, the Macy's Day Parade started and football started. We see that today with Friendsgiving. So it's all about what is going on in the contemporary sense and how does that shape our memories and our understanding of this this particular tradition.
So the first Thanksgiving wasn't really the first at all, was it?
No, it wasn't. No, not at all. So in the 1600s, people had long been celebrating some sort of day of Thanksgiving. So it was sort of a day you would get together with other people. There really wasn't necessarily a large meal involved or a lot of cooking. Certainly football hadn't been invented, but there would, you know, there'd be a gathering of people. Often it had to do with, some sort of religion or a religious tradition to celebrate the deities. And, you know, you'd get together and hang out, but we don't even think there was a large meal. So and all of these events had been happening up until 1621. So 1621 was just the first of many that, as far as we know, had been going on. And then it's just later on, especially with the Revolutionary War and then certainly with the Civil War, that it became what it is today. And then, of course, it keeps evolving as we go forward.
So even so, the story of the Pilgrim's Feast that was taught to so many generations, it really sticks in the collective memory. And what role does collective memory play in shaping celebrations like Thanksgiving?
Yeah. It's a collective memory is this idea that we all get together and share a certain understanding about something from the past. And certainly Thanksgiving is seen as what we as Americans share about the past. Now it's changing a lot and it's become, you know, obviously very, very criticized what that, you know, what we think that original thing was. But that's the idea is that we, you know, get together and remember this thing and, you know, perpetuate it. We give it off to our children. We give it off to our other, you know, friends and family members. Maybe in some cases, we even criticize it together. Today, a lot of people take issue, rightfully so, with this idea that these, you know, Native Americans were friends with the Pilgrims. Instead, it's seen as though these Native Americans were being exploited. And that this was sort of the defining point of the end of these Native people and the exploitation of this ethnic group at the hands of white settlers. So it definitely evolves over time. But there is this sort of memory that we all share to some extent about what we think that original holiday was, even though obviously it's so different than what it, you know, what we think of it today.
Well, you quote a phrase from French historian Pierre Nora that memory, and I'm quoting here, ceaselessly reinvents tradition. Do we understand why it does that?
Why memory reinvents the tradition? Yeah, I mean, I think it's useful to us. I think it gives us a sense of grounding. It is something we naturally do to some extent, but I mean, I gotta say, the government and other organizations play a role in creating that memory, right? So you got to think about Lincoln, and you have to think about the wars, and you have to think about what were they trying to do by having a Thanksgiving Day proclamation. And you got to think a little bit, you know, the football industry is very much supportive of this memory, a memory of a certain type, not necessarily from 1621, because football wasn't invented then, but it very much behooves them to be a part of that. And so on the one hand, we have this natural inclination to, you know, latch on to these traditions and these celebrations and, you know, contribute to this collective thought. But on the other hand, we also have some external forces that are pushing in on that and that very much want a piece of this pie.
So in that regard then, could Friendsgiving be thought of as a reinvention of the holiday, part of that, you know, reinventing the tradition?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what's it's so interesting. You keep seeing this holiday evolve. So if you go back to the historical literature, which I've done in some of my research, you know, it's like really seems disconnected, and it's exciting to be in an era where it's like, wait a minute, it's taken another meaning. It's Friendsgiving. We first started really talking about it and seeing it in about 2007. So this is really, really recent. And that's sort of the beginning of when we saw this term Friendsgiving for the first time. A lot of people attribute the beginnings to this television show, Friends, a very, very popular friend show. But if you go and actually look at the television show, they never use the term Friendsgiving. But there are obviously, you know, a day where they got together and celebrated essentially Thanksgiving. But that was kind of the beginning. But keep in mind, you know, one of the reasons it may have gotten started around that time is because we had a recession. And so you had a lot of young people moving into cities around, you know, the late, you know, 2000s. And then this holiday comes around, and maybe they don't have jobs, or the jobs aren't what they thought. They can't get a lot of time off of work. They don't have a lot of money to travel home. And so what do? They look around and say, all right, I've got this friendship group. You know, often a lot of this started in the Northeast, although it's spread all over the country. And so then they get together with their friends and they say, okay, it's Friendsgiving. And, you know, in some cases, not only is it more economically feasible because you don't have to travel, but it might even be a little bit more fun depending on who your family is and what sort of relationship that you have with them.
I agree, and I'm going to say then that my sister and I were ahead of the times because we lived together as adults for 11 years before I married, and we had that group of friends that either didn't have family close, were estranged from family. She and I could not get back to my parents, you know, at that time of the year for the holiday. And we did just that. We would open our house and we did all the cooking because we like to do it. So I just want to say, I just want to put it out there that, you know, the young people are doing it and that's great, but I'm just saying.
What year was this? Just
This was
so I could add this to my
probably
research.
in the let me think. This would have been in the throughout most of the 80s.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that was some of the beginnings. I
And I
love
think we
it.
just didn't call it that then. You know, it was just like,
Yeah.
hey, so and so's not going anywhere for Thanksgiving. All right, come on over. You know, that type of thing. So, and
Yeah.
we'd start early and go late.
Oh,
We're talking Friendsgiving, and up to
that's
date, my guest is Professor Amy Adamczyk. And am I
perfect.
saying that correct?
Yeah. We
Okay.
say a damn dick. It's again, it's changed over the generations.
Patience.
It's a yeah.
I want to bring in another guest in here, and that's Armando Turco, North America Executive Director of Brand and Creative for Oatly, that produces oat milk products. Armando, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So many of our holiday meals center around meat. Full disclosure, I am an omnivore, but the number of people choosing to leave the meat and/or dairy products out is growing. And that means that holiday meals can be hard on vegetarians and even harder on those who choose a vegan diet. Armando, why do you think people who eat vegan are looked at differently by others?
Well, I think it's a complicated question. I think for a long time, veganism and vegetarianism, for that matter, was seen as something that was a bit fringe, and frankly a bit crunchy. And I also think people in general, you know, just tend to kind of reject or poke fun at something that feels new or different to them. Also, you know, truth be told, there's been a lot of investment over decades, if not centuries, in sort of conditioning us to believe that, you know, meat needs to be at the center of the plate and that we need to drink a glass of milk every day, if not more. And we see that paying off in a lot of ways, but we also see a lot of shifts happening in the way that we eat and people incorporating a lot more plant-based foods into their diets, even at Thanksgiving.
Well, Oatly provides an emotional support hotline for plant-based eaters facing a meat eaters event. What kind of support is provided?
So the hotline, while rooted in, you know, a really noble intention and some hard facts, is really just kind of a playful way for us to sort of call attention to the Thanksgiving holiday and the plight of plant-based eaters, you know, during an occasion that has typically a pretty set menu. And so there's parts of it that are very fact-based, where we're providing data that can help people incorporate the benefits of plant-based eating into their dinner conversation, and especially, you know, the impact of our food choices on climate. But there's also many that are very lighthearted, like positive affirmations and a motivational speech, and even just an opportunity for you to scream into a void if you get frustrated.
And I think sometimes people want to do that. On Thanksgiving, the hotline will be manned by live operators, correct?
Yes, that's right. It's automated today, 866-OATLINE. I have to plug it.
I had it in here, but good enough. Yeah, thank you.
Nice. Yeah, on Thanksgiving Day, we'll have live operators taking calls from 3 to 10 p.m.
And is this the first year for this?
It is the first time we're doing it, yep. And it'll be up through the end of the year, but maybe we'll reprise it next year if all goes well.
And how do you train the staff to handle these calls? I mean, are they getting special instructions? Do they have little, like, cue cards or stuff? You know, if somebody says this, you know, this is where you want to go, or is it just listen?
It's mostly listening. The folks that we've selected to man the lines on Thanksgiving are, you know, nutritionists in their own right and have experience sort of with coaching and whatnot. So they bring a lot of their own experience to the table. But sure, we've shared a lot of our own knowledge and talking points. But at the end of the day, really, it's supposed to be just a fun experience for folks to call into.
And that number, by the way, again, is 1-866-OAT-LINE. Professor, is this another evolution to the tradition of the holiday?
Yeah, I would say so. That sounds like where, you know, our next step is. And especially with all the, you know, relatively young people that started celebrating Friendsgiving, they, I imagine, are also leading the charge in this direction as well.
And Armando, back in the day, vegetarians and vegans would often bring their own dish to the celebration, which is great if it's potluck. But isn't it time hosts who are preparing the meal, say your parents, make some effort to acknowledge the choice of their vegan guests with a dish prepared with them in mind?
Yeah, I think so. I think certainly as you know, plant-based diets are becoming kind of the new normal, or as you said, you know, people are becoming omnivores. Certainly there are more options available, and we actually hear from a lot of our fans and followers that is becoming more normal, but many of them are still sort of covering their bases and bringing their own as well.
Well, that's Armando Turco, North American Executive Director of Brand and Creative for Oatly. Armando, thanks for taking the time this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Have a good holiday. Bye-bye. Professor, the Thanksgiving tradition is coming around full circle, it seems, as Native Americans, as you mentioned earlier, are critical of the holiday. How do you see Thanksgiving evolving again as the Native American story of colonization is uncovered and told?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think some of the food is going to get, you know, maybe changed around, or and maybe even in the direction that we're talking about here, like more plant-based diets and rethinking what it is that we have. You know, already people sometimes protest on that day. And I certainly see that is going to continue. I mean, I can't imagine that the next generation of Americans is going to experience Thanksgiving the way we have. There's going to be a much greater conscientiousness about where we're coming from, the holidays that we're celebrating, why we're celebrating them, the role of consumerism. I think there's going to be some pushback at some point against you know, some of that as we move forward. At the same time, I mean, I think people like this sort of gathering, and it's the, you know, it's the right amount of time. It's not an important enough holiday that if you miss it, your parents are going to be mad at you. That's probably going to be Christmas, right? And it's, if there's not a lot of other celebrations around Thanksgiving, it's sort of like Thanksgiving is the one thing. Whereas like Christmas, you can do all this other stuff with your friends. You can go to the theater. You can, there's all these other things you can do. Thanksgiving is just sort of its own thing, and it often takes place in your home. So it's something lots of people from different socioeconomic backgrounds can do and engage in, and it's a great day for camaraderie. So I think all of those things are going to change, but there's just no way that the next generation is going to look back on some sort of idyllic pilgrims having this meal and celebration of a more American forefathers. That I can't imagine. That will probably end with other generations. So that's where that's where I see it going. Just a much greater conscientiousness about where we're coming from, what happened, why all this went together, and but yet still that connectedness on the day, the specialness of that day.
And we have just a few seconds left. Even social media is changing it. I've noticed that people will post in various cities they have room at their table for strangers with no plans, and they'll show up. Do you think that's a trend that will change the tradition?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, because now you can reach those people in a way that you wouldn't have been able to reach those people in the past. So yeah, no, that's a great question. I can say this based on Evite information. We know that the average gathering has been 22 people, which
Oh my
seems
goodness
very
gracious.
large to
That's
me.
just huge. That's just huge. Okay.
And that no, that's Evite. That might be a bit more formal. I don't think most of them aren't this formal. Mine are not 22 people. Yeah, I mean that all of that is changing things, and now we can reach people who don't have anywhere to go.
And we're going
And
to have to leave it there. My guest has been Amy Adamczyk, a professor of sociology at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at City University of New York. Amy, thank you for joining us. It's been great. And you have a great Thanksgiving.
thank you, you too.
Take care.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.